wrong in German, and I feel so bad about it.
You shouldn't feel bad. I mean, it's, you got to make mistakes. I mean, that's just the nature of being.
Yeah, that's true. I'm still pretty hard on myself about it, so.
You know, what the heck. It's not a big deal. I mean, it is a big deal in a way, but not really. So we're going to make more errors, and we'll just learn that much more, right?
Oh, yeah. But you're supposed to learn from them, so I feel like I should have already learned this, but, yeah.
So you, we're going to do, this is the show part two. I'll upload this one as a separate program.
Okay.
I'm going to let you, you were going to talk about our foods.
Okay, actually, I'm going to just touch on a couple things in 603.
Okay.
I think kind of, I kind of wanted to start with the beginning of it and then kind of just go down from the contact, but I kind of want to start with this first. Are we recording now?
Yep, we are.
Okay. Okay. Well, I still wanted to get your input about the German word, but I guess maybe that's for a different show.
Which German word?
What was it? Geheimnis?
Wiesenheiten?
No. it's Geheimnis. I was telling you about the way people translate, and I was trying to give you an example before we were cut off on the other one.
Oh, okay.
And I said, whenever someone is holding something back from you, this noun, this thing they're holding back from you, you know, like if someone says, I'm giving you my word and you're supposed to keep it, what do you call that?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you do. I don't want to say it because I have my way of saying it. You know, when someone's entrusting some words to you and you're supposed to keep it
an agreement?
Well, that's true too. Okay, I'll just say this. I translate it as secret.
Okay.
And this other person translates it as a mystery. And that just has a different meaning to me. And that's what I was saying when I go to read other people's things. They use a different word than I use for that. So I have a completely different understanding. Okay.
That's a totally different understanding.
However, mystery makes sense to this person. And yes, so therefore you can't argue because it is the word, but it's just a different meaning to you. So
that's a good example.
Yes. Well, and I've talked to this person about it, and it made sense to him this way, and it made sense to me the other way. And that's why I say I have problems with people's translations now.
Hmm.
You still conveys the meaning, but you just have a completely different idea towards it.
Yeah, I think it's complicated, man.
Very much so. Okay, so let's begin 603. Super excited about it. Did a little bit of research before I came on. But I want to start with kind of like in the middle before I touch on the main part for me. It talks about a guy from named Chris, who's from Poland, was doing research on the peace symbol.
Yeah.
And what was happening was that because of all this research he was doing about the rune of death, which is the peace symbol we use today, I guess he was trying to trace back the origin. I don't know what research he was doing, but Billy was telling Patai in this research that the peace symbol had a negative effect on his consciousness and his psyche and would give him these negative impulses, which seemed to cause lots of problems for him.
Hmm.
And I just think that's interesting because, you know, you see this you know, the death ruin symbol all over the place. And yet here's a guy that you know, was able to tell you, like, you know, I guess, you know, he understood these impulses. And, so I thought that was really interesting and probably need to be talked about. I know that Figu has made kind of like this big thing to use their peace symbol and to spread it. Matter of fact, this weekend I'm going to hopefully make some shirts with it and maybe give them out as gifts to some Figu-related friends. So,
oh,
I don't know.
Good idea. We'll see. Good idea.
Yeah. And this way it's kind of there on a shirt. People may not talk about it, see it, but it still has this impulse, this effect on them when they do look at it.
You know, and you're getting to something here that's interesting is because these all of these subconscious subtle effects, they kind of pile up.
Yeah, the subconscious works in a way in the background, but it notices all this stuff and it gives you these impulses. And these impulses, they affect your consciousness as well as your psyche. It's always giving you information, you know? I think most people know it as like intuition or that gut feeling you get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to give a quick story about a situation I had. I was actually going to throw one of my chickens out of the chicken coop. I got to the point where I wanted to actually kill this chicken, so I wanted to separate them out, and I was going to do this overnight. And I went to go into the chicken coop, and I was going to do this, and I started getting this really bad feeling in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I know that this feeling is trying to tell me something, and you know, look at my actions, look what I'm doing. I'm not going to do this. And just turned around and walked back.
Right.
And yeah, I think it worked out great for me. This rooster actually ended up becoming like the big dog in all this. And that was like kind of interesting. But anyhow.
Very interesting, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So this, you know, you're constantly getting impulses from, you know, from yourself. And I think it's important that we listen to ourselves. You know, we have this knowledge in us. So why not?
Well, one of the things I was meditating on, thinking about very intensely this morning for whatever reason or another, is the difference between the material consciousness and the spiritual consciousness. So, for example, your material consciousness, you know, 30, 40 years old, whatever, your spiritual consciousness is older than 4 million years, according to what the book The Psyche says. So that's the difference, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you also have the storage banks and, I don't know, you have the consciousness block and then whenever you reincarnate, a lot of this stuff gets put in the subconscious of all these past lives. So you have all this knowledge inside us. I think it's amazing. It's always been beautiful. Some of this stuff that I had to learn on my own, but then you come to the Billy Meyer case, he's telling you all this stuff and you're like, how important is it to listen to yourself? You know, it's like you've learned this before. It's giving you this again, you know, you just need to listen.
And I think the book called The Way to Live calls it our innermost creational personality.
Ah, yes. Inner steep. No, don't want to say it wrong. Yes, the innermost part of us. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of interesting when I think of that, I kind of look at it in a material way. Like you have the outer self, which is like the outer part of the brain. And you have like the inner self, which is like the inner part of the brain. That's kind of how I see this.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it. I've never looked at it that way.
Yeah. It's just, I try to see things scientifically and, you know, the science, psychology talks kind of like about the higher self being the outer parts, what we call the intelligent part of our brain and then they say the ancient part of us is like the inner part of the brain.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, I think it is. I love brain stuff now. I don't like psychology, however, I do love the brain stuff. So, all right, and so I wanted to talk, lead into that, and then get into the big part here. The big part is. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to just read my notes here. He talks about artificial fertilizers. And he talks about the spraying that they have to do in order to put the nitrogen and the phosphorus into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, because of all this we've been doing for, I think, 20, 30 years now, it can no longer be changed. He talks about, you know, the effects that it has on the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is these machines they press down the soil and which let me read something from something he wrote called The Destruction of the Environment as a Consequence of Overpopulation. And this was written a year after this. So I think Billy started becoming aware of the soil and then kind of made this huge paper, I guess you could say, the speech about the destruction of the environment, the consequence of overpopulation. Because we started to spray and do these things because we needed more food. We needed a way to feed more people, and so we needed a surplus of food. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in it, it talks about, due to the manifold chemical pollution of the soil and waters, the drinking water becomes poison, especially through chemical fertilizers such as phosphorus and nitrogen. The chemical substitutes naturally also reach the groundwater and thereby also into the drinking water cycle. So we're also drinking these fertilizers. All the chemical substances are extremely effective with warmer weather, such as open bodies of water, which are also used as a source of drinking water. And the algae blooms occur. Have you ever seen the waters recently that just kind of sit out in the open? You start seeing like this green stuff on top of it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He's saying that these things are becoming problematic because of the fertilizers that we put into the water, mm-hmm. or that are making their way into the water. We don't put them in the water, but we spray it and then it rains and it washes into these rivers, these waters, makes itself underground, and we drink it in our wells. Of course, in the cities, it can make its way in there. He talks about them being a bluish green coloration of the water. And I just told you about the green carpet algae.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to say, because of the bacteria produce various toxics, which, of course, poisons the water, so that when it is drunk or when it's used for cleaning your teeth or for cooking, it causes diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, as well as destructive damage to the liver and kidney.
Hmm.
And this is the interesting part. Through the heating and boiling of the water, the concentration of poisons increase even more. So we used to think we could just boil it and it'll kill everything. That is not the case for this.
Wow.
It actually makes it worse.
My goodness.
So I think that was kind of important to share. So people will be like, oh, I just boil my water. I'm like, no, that you're going to need way more than that at this point, which is something I kind of do now. But I don't live near any farms, so I kind of feel privileged in a way. But that's not to say other people aren't spraying into their gardens.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. And so, all right. So, all right, so this is no longer changeable. Now, there was also recently a study I did on this where the plants are actually absorbing more light because of the environmental changes that are happening from CO2, climate change.
Hmm.
And what's happening is that the plants are actually creating more sugar into their leaves and whatnot. Hmm. But what I want to talk about right now is the fact that these algae, they found that, people were seeing that there was more algae growing. They were like, great, there's going to be more fish then, because these fish, they'll eat the microorganisms and whatnot, come up there and eat it. The fish eat them. And what's going on is that these algae are not producing any nutrition. So these fish are actually dying from nutrition. They're not able to get enough protein. And so actually fish are dying off from this.
Wow.
Indirectly, I don't remember if it was the fish or if it was these small minnows or something, but it's what eats the algae itself. And I guess I should have did more research before I brought that up. But, also, it talks about the fact that oxygen can no longer get into the soil. So I was telling you that these, they use these big machineries that kind of go over there and they crush down the soil. So he calls them microorganisms in essential life die off because of this. They're not able to actually get their the oxygen because it's depleted. The soil has been crushed and compact. You ever been in the people's gardens or dug outside where it hasn't been messed with, and you start to dig a shovel in there, and all of a sudden there's worms and all these other bugs that you end up digging up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So typically that is what we, you know, should be there. But if you look at like the, you know, the agricultural or, you know, these massive farmers, they spray all these chemicals that kill all this stuff down there. But not only that, they can't even get back in there because it's crushed. There's nothing in the soil. I mean, they have to spray because of this damage they've done, which why Billy said it's no longer changeable.
Wow.
So we have to really redesign this, which I'm in the permaculture. And one of the things permaculture talks about is using a pitchfork one of the most important tools, because you actually can make holes into the ground and you allow oxygen into the ground.
Hmm.
Yeah, now I can go more into this as well. I did some research on these things, but I'm trying to cover the contact note as much as I can. He actually talks about, now, this study that he read or had Patel read was from Taiwan and Japanese. It was written by a German by the name of Dr. Annie Catherine. I don't want to butcher her name. And it was called EM Compact. And the way it worked was she had done a study based off of what was going on in Taiwan and Japan. And, you know, I don't know much about Taiwan, and I don't see too many people going, oh, yeah, you know, their medicine's really great and whatnot. And I really don't know much about Taiwan, but do you know much about Taiwan?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, I don't know how advanced their medical or any of that is, but they live longer than Americans.
Really?
Yes. So we, on average, we live 78.72 years. That's like the average American life.
Uh-huh.
Now, they live 80.2 years, but they don't have the advanced medicines that we have.
Hmm.
You got to admit, when it comes to the medical industry, United States is very, you know, that's where they call it the brain drain, because we pay these people so much more money than the rest of than the rest of the globe.
Right.
So a lot of people come here because they want to make money, which is understandable, I guess, you know. But you know, these people here in Taiwan, they're living longer than us and don't even have access to this, you know, the healthcare that we have here. And so, you know, they're in Japan as well. Japan is also sharing the soil with Taiwan. It's they're kind of both working together. It's actually taught in the schools, how this works. And in Japan, they live the longest at 63.84 years. Or I didn't mean to say 63. I'm sorry. I'm just going to round it up. They live 84 years.
And they've got Fukushima right there.
Yeah, and they got Fukushima. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, well, you'd probably be surprised. I'm sure there's lots of issues here in America that aren't really talked about. You know, we did drop bombs at one point, and we did some testings of bombs in Nevada. No, I think it was in Nevada. And a lot of that stuff has spread and caused issues.
That's incredible, man. It's the phosphorus in these pesticides that they're using on our soil, and the agriculture has just completely depleted the soil and even killed all of the insects that might have been living in our soils. So our farmland is kind of in just a horrible state.
Well, okay, so I want to correct you and say that they're spraying these poisons, which you were talking about the glyphosate, I believe,
glyphosates. Glyphosates, yeah.
Thank you, glyphosates. And which we're also spraying. So we're killing ourselves and we're killing the microorganisms, and as well as all the rest of everything else that works in nature.
Golly, terrible. It's so depressing. Yeah. Overpopulation is so ghastly. It's just so ghastly.
Yeah. Yeah. There's absolutely no issue that can't be solved by, you know, having less people. By adding more people, all problems only get worse.
Yeah, they do, man. There was this beautiful area. I live about an hour outside of Columbus, and just before you kind of go into the main Columbus area, there was still this one beautiful place with some trees and a little pond, and I would always drive past it thinking, wow, you know, there's still a few nice places left in Columbus. Well, about a month or two ago, they started just the bulldozers in there and another apartment complex being built. It's just terrible. The overpopulation is so terrible.
Yeah. It's horrible. Okay. So I want to continue on to this. So you know, they destroyed it. Now, have you ever been on Google Maps and put it on like the landscape mode where you can like see the pictures and then like zoomed out?
Yeah.
If you ever do that and you look at where people are farming, it looks like they're on deserts already. It looks deserty. It looks extremely deserty.
Yeah, the desertification is such a big problem.
Yes, and this has a lot to do with it. Of course, in that thing I just read with the consequence of overpopulation, or the destruction of the environment because of the consequence of overpopulation, which was also translated by Vigo Australia, goes into great depths about that. Even says in 2050, there won't be any more fish in the ocean that we can fish in terms of production, because there won't be that many fish anymore.
Well,
overpopulation.
We're putting so many plastics into the ocean. It's just
crazy. Yeah, so that's also talked about here.
Gosh.
Yeah, so Billy says that we can save some of this stuff by introducing the EM, which are called effective microorganism products, into the soil. And I did some research. Now, I'm big on permaculture, and permaculture is like, look at nature. How does nature do things? We need to mimic that and do that. And nature, because nature's been taking care of itself long before we step foot on it.
Sure.
And so anyhow, you know, we look at plants, we look at the animals, and in the book I was reading, it talked about how these organisms function. All right, so I'm trying to figure out how I should go into this. We'll just start with this first. All right, so basically what happens is that it started to talk about how leaves fall from trees, and you're aware of this. Leaves fall from trees all the time. People will bag them up and ship them off, like, don't know why, because those leaves, when they start to come down, they do have certain things on them which are kind of coated, so things can't eat on them, but over time, these things kind of disappear. And these organisms, I don't know if I should say microorganisms, but these organisms come and they start to break these leaves down. And they get to a point where they can no longer eat this stuff and kind of like, you know, disperse. And other bigger things like worms or beetles, stuff like that, will come and eat at parts of that. And also these other organisms will die off, and so it's also food for them. And what happens is they're basically breaking down nature, and it's already going back into the soil.
Well, let me ask you this. I typically just leave the leaves out there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, the best thing to do is to shred them up. I have chickens, and I try to put them in a pile, and the chickens will go in there, and they'll scratch through it, and they'll break the leaves off, and then I'll...
Okay.
So, and that's another way, permaculture, saying, hey, you know, how can we utilize these animals? You know, animals have been here and you know, they do this stuff already. How do we make it so they function like this? And people are finding out that, you know, that, hey, look, chickens scratch things. You know, how can we use that? And then look, we make these pile of leaves. They start scratching, and they scratch for all the little bugs that are breaking down these leaves as well. So, you know, they're kind of benefiting, and we benefit because we get the eggs or maybe eat the chickens.
I found something out that's very interesting, that the desertification in Africa, they found that if they'll take like livestock and move it quickly across the soils, that the droppings of the livestock will revitalize the soil, So mm-hmm. they you know how the big zebra herds move across Africa? Well, if they have livestock on these lands, they have to move them quickly like that. Otherwise, if you have the livestock on there and you just let it and sit in one spot, they'll overgraze and they'll turn it into a desert.
Yep. And so when you do that, two things happen, or really three things happen. The animals don't overeat the entire grass, so the grass doesn't go into like a stress mode.
Right.
And then they also step on the grass and actually puncture like little holes, and they'll like roll around in it as well. And this loosens up the soil and allows oxygen into it.
Wow.
And then their poop is basically these microorganisms. I shouldn't necessarily call it that, but you got to think about it. Our gut bacteria has all this stuff, and then it gets compacted into, I shouldn't have said poop, maybe I should say manure. Mm-hmm. And it comes out and falls on the ground, and then basically goes into the soil and then adds more to it.
So it's so amazing the way all these things work together. If we would just, like you said, mimic nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the cool part about Billy, that one of the reasons why I fell in love with him is because he said, all we have to do is, you know, pay attention to nature. And I was like, well, I love doing that anyhow. That's not a hard task. So yeah, of course we need to mimic nature. And remember, nature is these laws that creation has. That's all they're doing is the laws of creation, which is basically what Billy's trying to tell us to pay attention to follow.
You know, the first creational natural law is love. And if people really would let themselves love, they would know that we shouldn't be knocking down these forests all over the place and putting up parking lots and apartment complexes.
Yeah, yeah. And that paper, the destruction, that one I was just referring to a minute ago, he talks about, you know, basically the Amazons that we're destroying, they produce the most oxygen, and we're getting rid of, we're not only creating more CO2, but we're also getting rid of more oxygen, which, you know, if you know anything about the Meyer case, he talks about the oxygen on this planet is already not that great.
Right. And you think about, like, for example, the big fire on the West Coast right now, 270,000 acres of forest destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
it's staggering.
Yeah, so I wanted to also talk about that. God, there's so much to talk about. So he actually talks about burning stuff and how important it is to actually burn things, not the importance of it, but how burning things are natural fertilizers and therefore need to be utilized as such. But he does give recommendations on what to burn and what not to burn, and anything that's been treated or any cardboard that has like color or the glossy film on it, you don't want to mess with any of that. You don't want to burn any of that. You don't want that in your food.
Wow.
So, but burning, like, you know, not trees that have fallen, which I think at Sigu, the center, they kind of do this already. And he talks about the measurement of how much ash you should actually put back onto the ground, because if you overdo it, you'll change the pH.
Hmm.
And when you do this, plants can die very fast from the pH. There's certain wavelength. I don't know if I should call them wavelength. There's certain if you start going too far down, you get acidic. You go too far up, you get alkaline. And during these things, only certain things can be taken up. So, for instance, I think calcium, I don't have the chart in front of me. I'm not going to give any examples. I don't want to make any mistakes. But, yes, so you change this too much, the plant's not able to survive because it can't get what it needs. On that note, let's talk about these organisms, these organisms that I read in my own permaculture book that we're destroying in the soil. All right. So, in the soil, we have organisms that live in there, and these organisms act as the middleman, for the plants as well as the nutrition in the soil. What they do is the plants secrete sugar and vitamins, right, that are food for the beneficial bacteria and fungus that lives in the soil. There's masses and amounts of these close that they get really close to the roots, and some of them will even attach to the roots. And what happens is that the plants are creating these sugars and things and whatnot through its roots to kind of, you know, attract these things to it. And these things, they give off like enzymes and acids that the plant needs and can take up.
Okay.
They call this a symbiotic relationship in nature.
Symbiotic?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Symbiotics. Oh, man. Symbiotic. You can tell I have issues with saying words in general. they have that relationship with one another. And the cool part, what happens is that there comes a time when, they can only break down but so much, what we call humus or, we just call it humus or organic matter. We're gonna write this note out. And during this part, this actually acts as a negative charge. So, in nature, I don't know how much of this you're aware of, but everything has a positive as well as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
What we're not aware of is the positive and negative of everything. And this is kind of where physics kind of comes into play here, but or really science in general. What happens is that this humus actually acts as a negative charge, and what it does is it, you know, it rains and stuff, and things fall onto the ground and fall on it, and minerals such as, hold on, I wrote this down, I know it's copper, magnesium, zinc, attach themselves to it. Yeah, here it is. They attach themselves to the humus, and they're used by both the plant and the microorganism. So the plants are not only getting these minerals from these microorganisms, but also from the soil itself. So it's getting it two different ways. You have other things like worms and stuff in there that kind of make these tunnels, these whatnot to the soil. And this allows the roots to send, you know, it makes it even easier for the roots of the trees or the plants to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're destroying all that stuff by spraying. We till, and a lot of that stuff, you know, stays on top of the ground, and then it gets burnt and fried and cooked like anything that gets real hot. And the way this now, you're familiar with peat moss, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to pick up wet peat moss?
Probably.
Well, it's extremely heavy when it's wet. When it's not wet, it's not very heavy. I shouldn't say it's not very heavy. Depending on who you are, it might be kind of heavy. But you add water to it, and it's increased 4 to 6 times its weight.
Hmm.
That's how much water it's able to absorb. And that's what humus does, the soil that we have. It absorbs this water. And so we're sitting here watching California basically burn, I don't know. Now, a lot of the forest has been there for a while, but it wasn't always there. The place started out as a desert. And then we, you know, created these water canals and whatnot, and, you know, and grain used to function correctly that way. I shouldn't really be picking on California, but what happens is that we create this organic matter through composting. What happens is naturally in nature, leaves fall down every year. Massive amounts of leaves fall down, and inside these leaves, there's nutrition because, you know, there's typically different types of trees, and different types of trees take up different types of nutrition, and then they fall into the ground. Things come and eat them, and therefore you start getting this humus. This organic matter that all these things are kind of breaking down and turning into poop, and just naturally we didn't have to do anything. And what happens is it dries up, which makes the or it rains, I should say, and then it dries up, and through this process of expanding contracting, or I should say, I lost the word, but them shrinking and growing. The water, this actually traps oxygen into the ground. if we don't step on it with heavy machinery. It traps oxygen into the ground when this takes place and actually makes it for the organisms in there to be able to breathe.
Well, this, you know, all of this is very important to understand that there's this interconnectivity among nature. And it sounds like that, you know, we are just doing so many things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really making it difficult for nature in many, many ways, and ultimately making it harder on ourselves.
Yeah, there's a great quote that I love. Actually, it's on my Google here. I'm just going to read it off. And this is by Victor Schauberger, which is a guy that actually talks about these very similar issues. And he says, "Why can we not admit to ourselves that it's our senseless activity that is killing us?" And that's what's going on. I mean, you know, we started to learn about like the hair coloring, the dyeing of our hair, and how that basically poisons us.
Yeah.
You know, and then the nail file remover is literally absorbed, and you know, and we put all this stuff, you know, and I kind of feel like I'm picking on women at this point, but we overdo our cleaning of our body. We over shower, which actually destroys the sweat bacteria on our body, and so we become more susceptible to, you know, allergies, and just we do all these crazy things.
I didn't know that, man. Are you telling me that showering too much can make your allergies worse?
Yeah. So, and this is something I started to realize, but I didn't become conscious of it till later. But if you get out of the shower and you start to pat yourself, where you're supposed to pat yourself down, but if you wipe your skin, you'll start noticing you'll have runny noses and whatnot when you get out.
Really?
Yeah, you just pay attention to the way you clean yourself and the way your body responds to it, of course.
Wow.
That was something I started to notice. And it's also talked about in the Meyer case. Now, I don't think that was translated. So this is something that was translated and I read from the people I read German with. So I guess I kind of have more information than the average English speaker, that is.
Well, Solon, I really appreciate you coming on. We've kind of slammed almost two shows into one. I don't want to drag this one out too much more, but you really brought some really great information to the table here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Can I say one last thing?
Sure, go ahead. This is awesome.
All right, so when the machines run over this stuff and they compact this soil, water doesn't, Billy talks about this in the contact report, which, by the way, will be released once we put our finishing touches on it. I haven't really been talking about what it says more than research, so I don't, you know, because I'm translating it with someone and I want to make sure I don't say things wrong.
Okay.
But water sits on top of this and never makes its way into the soil. And because of that, we are creating deserts because water's not making it into the soil, which makes it really easy to burn this stuff. And this is why I talk about the fact that you need oxygen. You know, not only will the oxygen be able to make its way, but so will water. And they talk about these microorganisms being able to go really far down, these organisms in general. And because of that, the water can seep further down, and the water stores itself into the land. But right now, it just washes away. It just stays on top of it and never makes its way into the soil.
Wow.
Only on the top layer.
So you've really given me a lot of reason why we are having these fires in California.
Yes, of course. But now the environment has also changed because of the CO2 levels. And because of that, the ice melting, the cold front, the way the jet streams, the way they, now I remember showing you in old school. If you look at the way the jet streams are, they literally are passing California. So California used to get this rain coming from the Antarctic, but because of all the melting and whatnot that's coming on, the jet stream has changed course. And because of that, they are in drought because it no longer gets this cold air and whatnot that is needed in order to create rain. Because, you know, when the heat and the cold air mix, they create this moisture that falls to the ground. It's why when the cold front comes, you typically get snow or rain depending on where you live.
So a lot of this that you're telling me is in this contact report that you're translating.
Well, that part is not, but the soil and the burning. I'm sorry, I'm giving you information in which I'm aware because you're starting to talk about that.
Okay.
That part is not.
This is so interesting, man. I appreciate it. And we're going to have to do this again soon. Sounds like we're trying to take too much information and cram it into one session.
Well, I'm sorry. I've been doing a lot of, so I'm moving fast here.
That's okay, man. Well, let's break it now, and I'll go ahead and upload this one, and this will be a second show in itself, but it just won't be a whole hour.
Okay.
And I appreciate it, man. Great work, and we'll touch base soon, okay?
Awesome. Now, if anyone's interested in getting these, what Billy calls these bacteria, the names and whatnot, I'd be more than willing to share that with you. I know I didn't cover everything, and this contact note will be out eventually, and so people can read it for themselves.
Okay, so we'll get you back on, and then we can finish up some of these other ideas, okay?
Perfect. Sounds great.
I will talk to you later. So long. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.